हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
On page 14. It is said here that one should meditate on the Supreme Lord. This implies that the Lord has a form, for if the Lord did not have a form, it would be very difficult to meditate on Him. By meditating on the Lord's form, one easily attains the supreme goal of life. One who does not meditate on the Lord's form finds the supreme goal of life elusive and difficult to attain. Therefore, the conclusion is that one should meditate on and worship the form of the Lord. Paramatma Sundarbha 105, 15 through 20. Right? So therefore the jigyasa means meditating upon the Lord. So you're inquiring about the Lord means you're absorbing yourself in the Lord. That's the point. It's not that you're just inquiring means you're asking questions. Is you're actually absorbing yourself in the Lord. Does that make sense? Because otherwise the intellectual asks questions. But are they absorbed in the Lord? No. But here, that because you're absorbed, you're asking questions. Does that make sense? So it's a difference in the mood. You know, you want to know about the Lord, so that means you're focused on the Lord and always thinking about the Lord. That will therefore generate the meditation. So jigyasa has to come to the point of meditation, not just, you know, interested. So submissive inquiry means meditation. Is that in some sense? Yeah. Atato. In the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, the word satyam explains the word atataha in the first sutra of Vedanta Sutra. Immediately following the word ata is the word ataha, which means for this reason. The word ata, now, here means after one has studied the Karmakanda section of the Vedas and the Purva Mimamsa, Karma Mimamsa philosophy. That is the meaning here. The word ataha means after studying the Brahmakanda portion of the Vedas and the Uttara Mimamsa Vedanta philosophy. The meaning is that after studying Vedanta, there is still more to be studied. So atato is ataha. Right? Does that make sense? So one means studying the Veda, the Karma Mimamsa section, all that means the Brahmanas, all the different things that deal with ritual, the Purva Mimamsa. Then ataha means the Uttara Mimamsa, right? All through the Vedanta. Having done that, now there is more to inquire about, right? Because we said that there's the Supreme Personality is there, meditating upon Him. So now we should go further beyond this to meditate upon the Supreme Lord and to know Him. Yes?
Then Vedanta means the end of all knowledge.
Yes.
So after we hear, theoretically reach the end of the whole knowledge.
Right.
Then we have to apply it. That's what it means.
Yes, it applies it, but it also means is if you're going to apply it, then that generally is the application comes by association. Right? The association comes by the commentaries. Right? And those who have written it. And what's the natural commentary? Bhagavatam. So, atato brahma jigyasas, now, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, I should be, submissively inquiring, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a person, Bhagavan. Is that? Yeah. So that's what we're trying to get to. Okay. In Vedanta Sutra, The Purva Mimamsa philosophy is the philosophical opponent to be defeated by the answers given by the Uttara Mimamsa philosophy. Right? The Uttara Mimamsa philosophy enables one to attain peacefulness and the other virtues of goodness and purity. Therefore, it comes after the Purva Mimamsa. Right? So, the Purva, that means is how to function in the material world, how everything will work nicely here, the best it can get. Right? And so the Purva Mimamsa also, by the nature of it, is more complete than the other four schools below it. So it is able to reconcile those other four. Right? The Purva Mimamsas, they use logic. The atomic theory is not a problem for them. Shankhya, yoga, all these things, they can use those all nicely because they're all elements of piety. But instead of just focusing on one, they're all put together within the ritualistic aspects, the karmakanda of the Vedas. Therefore, all acts that are considered pious, that by them one will get a good material result, Purva Mimamsa embraces all that. Right? It leaves all the lower stuff, tantra and all this kind of jazz. It, working on that mode of goodness way, because the mode of goodness, then you'll be, that will be stable. Right? But because if you use passion and ignorance, like some of the other forms may use, that won't be good. So therefore, they just stick to the highest levels of what the Vedic recommendations are for a proper life within karma. Yes?
Uttara Mimamsa would be only Vedanta, and everything else would be Purva, including some...
No. Oh.
Those.
No, say that again.
I said that Uttara Mimamsa would be only Vedanta Sutra.
No, Uttara Mimamsa means the Aranyakas and the Upanishads. Right? So the essence of that is given in Vedanta Sutra. Right? While the Purva Mimamsa means it's dealing with the Samhita of the Veda and the Brahmanas of the Veda. Right? So then it's all about how to engage in the karma activities. Right? So engaging in the karma activities, that will be then delineated in Karma Mimamsa from Jaimini. Right? So in other words, taking the Samhita and the Brahmanas, then he puts together a philosophy on that, that's Jaimini. Right? Mm-hmm. Taking the Aranyakas and the Upanishads, put that together, you get Vedanta. Mm-hmm. That's Uttara Mimamsa. Okay?
So the rest, they don't into those categories.
They're studying from all of those, but they only take selected verses here and there. You know, what? Because they're focusing just on logic and this and that. You know, so, yeah. So that's why it says that Karma Purva Mimamsa is the philosophical opponent, because Purva Mimamsa can defeat all the other schools. So therefore, if you can defeat Purva, you can defeat all the other four. So that means by defeating one, you've defeated five. Right? So that's why it said Purva's the opponent. Yeah. So, sense? Yeah. So that will give you nicely situated in goodness and as stable as you can get within the material world. But because every fault has a problem, I mean every action has a fault, therefore, there will be some elements that won't be pious enough. Maharaj Nriga, he performed, you know, sacrifices like sand on the beach. Unlimited. But within that, one time he did something wrong, he ended up as a lizard. So that's the whole point, is Karma Mimamsa has its limitations. So then Uttara Mimamsa, it says, enables one to attain peacefulness and the other virtues of goodness and purity. So that's because it's dealing with pure goodness. Right? Now if you're dealing with Shankara Vedanta, then you're only dealing with goodness. But if you're dealing with the Vaishnava Vedanta, then you're dealing with pure goodness. So that goodness, you're situated nicely because there's no desire to gain anything. So the passion, ignorance is basically at least been reduced. So that will give, therefore, peacefulness, right? Passion, ignorance is what causes disturbance, anxiety, you know, hopes and desires, lamentations, all these things, right? And goodness and the other virtues will naturally come up because the focus is not on anything material, so there's nothing to distract. To do things piously, you have to have good qualities. But those good qualities get reduced because of your focus on other things that aren't actually that ideal. Is that? The Uttaramimamsa philosophy is described in the following words of the scriptures. In the Chandogya Upanishad 8.16, it is said, "Whatever benefits one attains in this lifetime by good karma will ultimately perish. Whatever residence in the heavenly material world one obtains in the next life by material pious deeds will ultimately be lost. However, a person who knows the Supreme attains all his desires. He can travel to any world he likes." So whatever piety you do here, that'll be lost. The gains from that piety, they'll also be lost. But when you understand actually about the Supreme, you know, so you know about the Supreme, the soul, the relationship, that then one actually then is able to travel everywhere. So anywhere means around here you can move as needed, but it means you can go to the spiritual world. Because otherwise, they've already mentioned whatever you get here will be lost. If you go to the spiritual world, that's not lost. Yes, Narad Muni. He can move anywhere he likes, yes. Yes, good example. These two, Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa, are also described in these words of Srila Ramanujacharya's Vedanta Sutra commentary. Quote, "The fruit of activities prescribed by Purva Mimamsa bring results that are paltry and temporary. However, the knowledge of the Supreme that is attained by following the Uttaramimamsa brings results that are limitless and eternal. Therefore, after one has mastered the Purvamimamsa, one should strive to understand the Supreme who is described in the Uttaramimamsa. Therefore, in the first sutra of Vedanta, Lord Vyasadeva, who is himself the original cause of all causes, explains, after understanding the fruit of activities of Purvamimamsa, one should strive to understand the Supreme. Therefore, atta atta." Right? So, it's interesting. Is I think we'll see this goes on for some. Oh, no, just this general. Oh, okay, because this is Jiva Goswami's.
Yes.
Like that. Then we'll get into that. Because the biggest discussion is actually on this atta atta ha. You know, like that.
Maharaj,
yes.
Well, Srila Prabhupada explained this atato as now that you have achieved the human form of life.
Yes.
Is that being kind to us who have never studied what is proper duties and so on?
Yes, you could say like that. Because human life begins with varnashram, so that means that's the purva mimamsa.
Yes.
But the point is from there then you're supposed to understand mukti. So that's the Uttaramimamsa. So the point is without human training, you can be absorbed in an anamoy and pranamoy. Right? But only with human training does manamoy and vijnanamoy come into it. That's the principle. So knowing that then is there. So we're supposed to then, having got to that, you know, the point is we should go to that, but there's beyond that because there's an anamoy. Yes.
Can I also just comment on the Maharaj's question that in a Vedic philosophy everybody discusses the same thing. There is that commonality of Shruti being the supreme praman.
Right.
And everybody's giving their angle on what it is, mm-hmm. how they understand it, how they perceive it. So you can have a logical presentation when there is a common topic being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if the substance everybody talks about something else, then you cannot draw logical conclusions. So therefore, this Vedanta Sutra and other darshans as well, they talk about the same thing, and then logically they explain, they prove how their view is right. Otherwise, mm-hmm. if there is no substance, logic in itself, so whoever is most convincing will win. I remember sometime before, in school, one of the boys was trying to explain the eternity of time. Not an easy thing to explain when you're 12, 13 years old. So I remember at the end he made a very compelling argument. You know, he was going on and then he goes, "Thus, therefore, because, indeed." So it was very, very convincing at all the boys from. Yeah. But there's not so much substance in that because indeed good narrator.
Yeah.
So, so the substance of the discussion has to be there, and that's the common substance is the Shruti.
Yes.
this atta-atta and like that, because they all talk about the same thing.
This is how you're going to apply it.
Yeah.
Another way of also putting it together was to be typically done. We were just showing that to show that just human life. Mm-hmm. But the general thing is purva vimamsa means dharma artha kama. And then uttarimamsa means moksha. So having studied dharma artha kama moksha, then now it's time to inquire beyond that into ananda. Right. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, into the fifth. You know, what's that? Prema pumarto from Maha.
Yes.
Okay. Is
that, okay.
This is also explained in the description of the two ears, Pitrihu and Devahu, in the story of King Paranjana, footnote 17. Srila Prabhupada comments in the Bhagavatam. The right ear is used for kamakandiya, or fruit of activities. As long as one is attached to the enjoyment of material resources, he hears from the right ear and uses the five senses to elevate himself to the higher planetary systems, like Pitri Loka. Such a person can use the right ear for hearing Vedic injunctions. Consequently, the right ear is here as described as the Pitrihu gate, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:25.50 purport. But the left ear is known as Devahu, is utilized for hearing about even higher planetary systems, such as Mahar, Tapa, and Brahmaloka, or yet even higher planets situated in the spiritual universe, where one becomes more inclined to be permanently situated. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:25.51 purport. This means that after understanding that the pleasures of Swarga Loka and other places in the material world are all inferior and temporary and lead only to suffering in the end, a person will yearn to understand the Supreme. For by understanding the Supreme, one attains eternal bliss. That is why one will yearn to understand the Supreme as described in the words Brahma Jigyasa at the beginning of Vedanta Sutra, Paramatma Sandarbha 105:26-32. So here the Pitrihu and Devahu means, Pitrihu means dharma artha kama, and then Devahu will be moksha. And so having that these two having heard, now one will move to the conclusion of that. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, these two kinds of hearing is what people hear. That which is about the spiritual, that which is about the material. Yes?
Can we say that then, according to this, Vedanta Sutra could be described up to the level of moksha and not beyond? Or beyond this?
No, because it's saying about, it's opening with, now it's time to inquire what's beyond. Because people have read the Upanishads, they've been all this, so it's now, because that's why it said is Brahman means the person. So his point is up to now you've discussed about, you know, karma, you know, about sense gratification or fruit of activities and liberation. Now is time to discuss what's beyond that. Because you can be pious and just have discussed those lower things. Does that make sense? That's why the Veda itself is counted as aparavidya. But Vedanta, that's paravidya. Right? And also the other six schools, they're all considered aparavidya. Right? Some of them.
Adhikarana 1, inquiry into Brahman. Brahma Jigyasa Adhikaranam. Summary, what is the goal of human life? Sutra reference 111. Verse reference Srimad Bhagavatam 111, 127 through 11, 1339. So all these verses from Bhagavatam, they're natural commentaries on this first verse of Vedanta Sutra. This Adhikarana of inquiry into Brahman. Does that make sense? Because that's the point, is how the goal of human life. So these verses will then describe that. Right? Vishaya. The work starts with a section called Inquiry into Brahman. Yo vai bhuma tat sukham nanyat sukham asti bhumaiva sukham bhuma tvena vijigyasitvayaha. That which is great happiness. there is no other happiness. That great Brahman is happiness. One must know this great Brahman. So that's from Chandogya Upanishad 7.25.1. Right? So here's, because we see is that the Vedanta Sutra is coming from the Upanishads. Right? It's giving the essence of the Upanishads. So here will come out all the different verses from the Upanishads also, where this is based upon. Right? So that's the thing about this. It shows that, and then we're showing the Bhagavatam connection. So it's a very solid. Right? No one can complain that there's no philosophy here.
So, the Vedanta Sutra that is coming from the Upanishads, therefore, will it not be for a student of Vedas, repetitive study, you know, doing the Upanishads and then again doing the Vedanta Sutra?
It's not repetitive because the point is what's the goal of the Upanishads? That's what Vedanta Sutra is showing. And then any other kinds of perspectives on the Upanishads is correcting. Because the verse from the Upanishad is there, but what's the hermeneutics? Right? How do you interpret the verses? So in other words, Vedanta Sutra is giving what is the actual proper interpretation of the Upanishads. Does that make sense? So from that, then you can look at any verse anywhere, also in the Purva section. Right? Instead of the Uttara. Because Uttara is then giving the philosophical understanding of Purva. And then Vedanta Sutra is giving the proper, clear understanding of the Uttara. So, it's not so much an elaboration. It means you could say, but the point is this is all part of the Veda. It's considered Veda. Like that. Is that it's giving... So you have the verses themselves, you have the ritualistic understanding or application of the verses, you have the metaphysical understanding of the philosophical. That's the four sections of the Veda. Right? So Vedanta Sutra is giving the conclusions on the philosophical. Okay. One should see this Brahman, hear about it, and think of it. O Maitreya, one should know this Brahman. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 2.4.5. Right? So this is the Vishaya, right? Is that you have to know about Brahman. Okay? One must know this great Brahman. One should know this Brahman. Right? So that's the whole point the Upanishads are making. So all the other sutras in the work are going to be based on this sutra. They all have to be connected with about understanding Brahman. They won't be talking about, you know, how to make a banana smoothie or something like that. You have to look in the Atharva Veda for that one. Okay? Yeah? So, okay. Shamshaya. Is inquiry into Brahman necessary or not for a person who has studied the Vedas and who knows Dharma? Right? Because otherwise you can study the Vedas, one knows Dharma, one is practicing it very nicely. So is there a need to go further? Right? Because also you could say is that these rituals are Brahman also. Everything's Brahman. Right? Purva Paksha. It is said, we have attained immortality by drinking the Soma juice. Rig Veda 8.18.3. Right? So this is going to be, right? We've Shamshaya, this doubt comes up. So is it necessary? You say inquiring into the Supreme, but do we really need to do that? Because, you know, we've studied the first section of the Vedas, and from that, you know, we have obtained immortality by drinking the Soma juice. So we perform the things. We've attained immortality. You're saying Brahman is immortal, is eternal. We've attained that eternal platform by this. Why do we have to study about Brahman? Does that make sense? Right? Because everybody thinks it'll be eternal. Right here is they have the Shastra thing, they drink, they go through the ritual, they get the things and that. But if anybody has something that's nice, they have that feeling of eternal. Right? Any good material thing where you're engaging the senses or the emotions, and if everything's working perfectly with no obstacle, and it's of good quality, one will be touching the eternal aspect of the Lord, and one thinks, I am eternal here. The experience is eternal. You understand? So that's going. So that's their point is we've already done that. Why do we need to get into this, you know, other eternal stuff? Does this make sense?
Yes.
So that's the doubt of the Karma Mimamsas. Yes, yes. Well, that's why it says it's about defeating them. Because the whole point is the living entity is the material world because I'm the controller and the enjoyer. So they have a philosophy that supports I'm the controller and enjoyer to the best possible means. The other guys kind of jump out because they can't figure out how to control and enjoy, so they go for liberation. Right? But these guys says, no, we've worked out how you can enjoy it. So they say, okay, and then the next verse. Those who know the vow of Chaturmasya attain eternal credit. Apastamba Shrauta Sutra, Krishna Yajurveda 8.1.1. Thus, by following Dharma, one attains immortality and unending happiness. Inquiring to Brahman is therefore unnecessary. They don't say it's useless, they just say it's not necessary. Right? You're saying inquiring to Brahman because that'll create the peacefulness and all these other things. We already have that. So, hey, you know, why do we need to do this? Siddhanta. Hearing this objection, Lord Vyasadeva raises the first sutra at the beginning of the work. Okay. The Shamshaya is the doubt, the Purvapaksha is their explanation. Right? So the Shamshaya, yeah, is the doubt. In other words, that's their Vishaya. We have our particular, our point we want to make. Hearing that, they have a doubt, so they have their point they want to make. Right? You understand? So the Shamshaya is the point they want to make, the Purvapaksha is their evidence. Right? So because of that, therefore then, now, Vyasadeva's counter to that, or Uttara, is going to be the next verse. Like that. This is, therefore, the commentary. You know, because he's already shown everything before we actually got to the verse. Right? Why the verse is necessary. Brahma Sutra. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. After attaining association with devotees, one begins the inquiry concerning the Lord. Right? So that's Baladev's translation of this. Right.
Huh?
Yes. So that's how the whole thing's going to go. So it's all based on that in the association of devotees, you're going to acquire about the Supreme. So it's not just you should inquire. You should inquire in the association of devotees. That's why these commentaries are necessary, because in the sutra form, one wouldn't understand that. Right. So that's why when they're expanded, then you can see what actually they mean. Mm-hmm. But so that means is you come in contact with devotees, you can inquire. From that, you'll gain faith. Then from that faith, then you can fully take advantage of that association and then progress up to prema. But the whole process starts by in the association of devotees, inquiring. So that's where the beginning happens. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Ataha, ata indicates sequence, and ataha indicates cause. The meaning is, quote, therefore after this, one should inquire about the Brahman. Right? After a person has studied the Vedas according to the rules, has understood the meaning and has been purified by following his ashram duties and tenets like truthfulness, he attains the association of persons who know the truth. After attaining that association, he then realizes that the karma is performed to fulfill material desires, give limited temporary results. He understands that Brahman is attained through knowledge, that it is eternal, infinite spiritual bliss, that it produces qualities like eternal knowledge in the self, and it causes eternal happiness in the self. With understanding, he rejects rituals for material results, kamya karma, and begins to inquire about the topics in the Brahma Sutras. Right? So, he's performed these activities and all that. He's studied the Vedas. He's applied the Vedas. He's doing his proper activities. That's why it says, having come to the human form of life. Because acting on that, that's actually the human form of life. So that's why we can see that when Prabhupada says we're involved in this process of inquiring about the Supreme by His cause mercy,
Because how many can say that they have studied the Vedas, practicing the karmas according to duties, and therefore qualify themselves on the human platform of life? Right? There are a few devotees who can say that, but it's definitely a handful. You know, because we're talking not that they're just born in Brahmin families and they do a little bit like this. It means they properly studied and they know how to properly practice this. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Because then from that, then what's the real purpose? In other words, if I practice human life, then I get results. From those results, I can see they are temporary. Right? Because as it is, much of the time people are worried about getting material results and that they'll be happy because they haven't gotten them. You know what I'm saying? Many are thinking, yes, if I just get a little more money, I just get this, I just get that, I just, you know, do all these material arrangements, then I'll be happy. For someone who's studied and practiced, then they know that from doing this, I've gotten the results, and having gotten the results, I am not happy. Because they're temporary results. They can't make you happy. Does that make sense? That's the recommendation why the Vedic system is used, because the Vedic system is the only system that can get you the human results that you can therefore compare and see they don't give proper results. It means don't give permanent results. Soul is eternal, the results of karma is not. So, we can say whatever we want, oh, Varnashram, we're above that and all that, but can we say we're above karma? Devotees aren't endeavoring. It's just like, let us say there's someone in the West, a devotee in the West, and he mentions to an associate in the West, you know, I'm thinking to move to Mayapur. What is going to be the first question that associate asks? How will you maintain yourself?
Is it safe?
Yeah, is it? Are the Bengalis going to catch you and roast you at night on a spit? Yeah, so just the difference is there won't be an apple in your mouth, maybe a portal or something like that.
Either way, it's gain and safety.
Yes, gain and safety, yeah. Yeah, you understand? So gain and safety is the whole thing. So we can say we're transcendental, but all we've done is we've transcendentalized ourselves by dropping ourselves from the platform of human life into subhuman. From Varnashram, which is Manamoy, into subhuman, into Pranamoy. And then we'll say, see, now we're situated as devotees. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, you know, yes, like the moonwalk, it looks like you're going somewhere, but you're going backwards. Yes.
It says here that one should reject rituals for material results.
Yes.
Well, usually we take it, you know, as normal. We just reject everything.
Of course.
Yeah, so it's easy.
It's the Hollywood podity of hermeneutics.
Mm-hmm. So, like, for those people that hear about the devotion is talking about, means they just don't endeavor extraneously for karma anymore. They just follow the basic.
Yes, stuff. In other words, what you need to do. In other words, what's your daily and is your nitya naimittic activities, your daily and occasional activities that are recommended that maintain one's position so that you can perform devotional service, that's done. Things beyond that aren't necessary.
So it depends on the ashram, basically.
Depends on the ashram, it depends on the individual, the conditioning. But, you know, there's a basic lifestyle you can say that works. But how basic that will be. You know, somebody's in a studio, and as a couple, they're fine. Other people have to have a few more rooms. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is it depends on the individual. But the point is why work beyond what is... That's why Prabhupada says being comfortable is you're not uncomfortable. So just how much from the endeavors that give results you require to maintain, that's what you do, because maintenance is goodness. So you're not focused on expansion, right? You're not losing, right? So there's no passion and ignorance. It's just what you need to maintain. So let's say if you're at a particular level, but it's not comfortable. So therefore, having something more than that would be comfortable. Endeavoring for that is not kamyaka. Not at this point as a grihastha.
Because then it just gets you up to the level that you're comfortable. To go beyond that, okay, you know, you wanted the whatever it is there, but then you just keep wanting more and more and all that, then that turns into the kamika. That's beyond. So one has to be honest, how much do I actually require? That life is comfortable. So that's what you're trying to do here. So that requires intelligence, that requires discrimination. That's the difficulty, is that due to lack of intelligence, it's just emotion. We either accept something wholeheartedly or reject things wholeheartedly. You know, we take the whole, it's either all or nothing. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like we're down, we're fixing our car, the guy's a nice guy, you know, and he's good at fixing cars, so we start asking about things in our spiritual life. No, you don't ask him, you just ask about your car. Does that make sense? So you have to be very, very, you have to use your intelligence to discriminate what you use and what you don't use. Is that something? Yeah, that's the
mentality, all or nothing. That sounds like the karma of Jnana, but it's all when we put
yes,
the
karma, yeah, that would
nothing
be
means we reject
it. Yeah, forward. That's very good, very good. So that's where it would come from, why all or nothing. It's just the standard. It's just that why we mentioned Hollywood, because they've learned how to make the most money out of it. Yes.
Sorry, this is a stupid question.
No, see, is stupid or not means is what we're taking, we're discussing. Are you analyzing it, how to apply it, and in applying it, you're running into an obstacle or a doubt. Then you ask. If it's just that, oh, that's interesting, and that's connected with this, and that also is this one over here, and oh yeah, and that, and I heard this guy said this, but then why did that guy say that? That's the kind we don't want.
No, it's more that it could have been answered in the, like, you know, it's just something that I've always wanted to understand.
Then, but are you ready to understand it?
Yeah.
So then you ask.
Okay, so you mentioned gain and safety before, and you keep mentioning that this is some sort of negative thing, and I can see gain meaning like material gain, that's not good, but safety, like, I don't understand what's wrong with it, like, I want to be safe.
But what is being safe mean?
Well,
what's safe?
Essentially, it's got to do with the soul.
Essentially, it has to do with the soul, but the soul, is there any place in the material world that's not safe for the soul?
No,
where is the place that is actually dangerous for the soul?
Well, in my conditioned state.
No, but that's another thing. First, deal with that, because otherwise you don't want to mix the two.
Okay. So no, there's no place.
There's no technically situation, but there is one situation that's bad.
Material covering.
No, that they already have. Sorry. Forgetting the Lord, and in what situations do you forget the Lord? Think that we're on the first verse. How does the first verse open?
Satsang.
So, bad association is dangerous for the soul.
Yeah.
But we may consider that bad association good for our conditioned position. So, in other words, we're trying to maintain the conditioning. Why do we want to maintain the conditioning?
Because we've got attachment to it and it's comfortable.
Okay, and then what's so great about that? Okay, you've gotten it, and as we saw before, what we discussed is having gone through the karma and seen that it doesn't give results that are of any benefit, you know, long term, mm-hmm. it won't be satisfying the soul, so why are we attached to that? No, but you're the one that's saying it's important. In other words, so then if we're following the logic here, you say you don't know, so do you accept the principle that's given here?
No.
That gain and safety is not what's important. It's the soul's connection to the Lord. Having gained the association of devotees, one inquires about the Supreme.
Okay, I think I'm understanding that as a material safety, like, if you're in a dangerous, like physically dangerous
situation. But what's the point of saving yourself from a physically dangerous situation?
Because you can get on with your service if you're in a...
So therefore it's devotional service that's important.
Right.
Does that make sense? Let us say
you take over. You've had a kitchen, been a family kitchen there for so long, whatever it is, somehow or another, now it's under your control. Before, you weren't a devotee, the kitchen was there. Now you're a devotee, right? So now you're going to use the kitchen in Krishna's service, right? So now you're going through all the things within the kitchen. Okay, so now you come across this funny kind of hammer, right? It's got a nice wooden handle, very smooth and nice. It's got this big square kind of head. And on the head, there's all these kind of like teeth. Mm-hmm. Right? You know the hammer?
Yeah.
Everyone knows the hammer?
Yes.
Not everybody knows the hammer. You know the hammer?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you keep that hammer?
Probably not.
Right? Yeah. Does Panier need some softening up?
Not with that hammer.
Huh? To keep safety. Maybe.
That's another thing. If you want to put it over on the side, you know, like that. You know, but the point is, do you need it?
No.
No. Why not? Because it doesn't support devotional service.
Yeah.
So therefore, gain and safety that's connected to the Lord, that's not the problem.
Right.
See, it's when you have to be very, very careful, is that hearing a word, and then you have a concept about that word, and so therefore then it's like that you have to be careful of. You have to see it in the context of here.
Mm-hmm.
This is where basically culturally the whole problem comes up. Because if we say these things, no, but we're grihasthas, we have to take care, we have to do this and that, we can't just let, you know, all these things happen like that. We're not saying that shouldn't happen. We're saying is that what's the point of it unless it's connected to the Supreme?
Yeah.
You've protected your family, you've gotten money, they have a nice facility. Now what?
Yeah.
So if it's not connected to Krishna, then what's the point? Because at some point you get old, the place falls apart, kids grow up and they don't want to live there anyway.
And you haven't gotten anywhere with devotion.
Yeah, so then what's the point?
Yeah.
So you have to always see it connected to devotional service. So that's what's being said here.
Okay?
Yeah. So in other words, things that are just are semantics on words, and things that are doubts that aren't about application. We're not trying to apply, we just hear the word, and because of semantics, immediately there's a doubt. These are the things we have to be careful about. These aren't for this discussion. Right? Because the what do you call it? The pranipata means we want to know, but what's going to be is the application in sevaya. So the doubt comes up as I've heard this, that's very nice, makes sense, but when I apply it, I have this problem. Right? Then it becomes very useful. Does this make sense? We're just explaining what's the basis of how to ask questions. Yes.
This famous story of Shankaracharya, I don't remember, it was Duryabhat or somebody, and they wanted to have a debate, and he said, well, first take sannyas,
then we'll talk.
Then we talk.
Yes.
So the idea is that questions, which are detached questions, they will fit very nicely.
Yes.
When there's some misgiving, and there's some attachment to certain things, then that will be solved.
Yes.
Then we get caught up in this kind of thing.
Yes, yes, okay.
In the text
here, mm-hmm.
We'll
have, yes, we'll have. So that makes sense, because the problem is we have words and we have definitions for those words ourselves. We have our own hermeneutics. So that's what we're learning, is new hermeneutics. Because our hermeneutics is, if I can engage my senses in that and get benefit, I will take it. But this is that if I can engage my senses to please Krishna, I will take it. So it's different. So generally, because of our, you know, all or nothing, our karma, jnana, is it's either I take the whole package, the whole material package, or I throw the whole thing out. So grihastha means anything I want, anything I feel, anything I do, anyone the family feels and wants to do, like that, that's then bona fide grihastha life. Or throw all that out and you have nothing and don't have anything and don't take care of anything physically or emotionally or anything with all family members and all that, and that's a good Krishna conscious grihastha. Right? Did I leave anything out in between? So that's the whole point. So what Bhagavatam is and the Vedas are teaching is that in between these two, then there is a whole range.
That's the whole
Varna. Because, yes, you can have everything, but you have to be able to engage in Krishna service. And you can have nothing, and you're engaging that in Krishna service. So the in-between is, therefore, where do you fit in this? Because how many people can have everything or can have nothing? Very few. Right? So therefore, we must be in between. So because we've applied this karma and jnana principle, we're dissatisfied. So now it's being brought out, no, we have to go beyond into the transcendental. That we can apply to whatever position we're in. So that's the point. Is all these others are all different. Someone will say, you know, level, you know, 37, that's really good. I'm really satisfied here. But someone else, no, 44 is really good for them. And, you know, so all these different things is that there'll always be a difference of opinion. But if it's connected to Krishna, that's the point. From 0 to 100, all of that applies. Only the Vedic philosophy can do that. Only a Chinta Beta Beta Tattva can do that to such fineness. Right? Like that. Because let's say all the things within the standard pious element, then the other sampradayas can accommodate that quite well. So the wide range, you see, grihasthas that are very wealthy, grihasthas that are very simple within the Sri Madhvas and the sampradayas. And they have no problem between each other. Because there'll be more the devotional thing or a particular thing they're good at. Someone's very good at rituals, someone's samskaras, someone knows shaligram so well, someone knows, you know, the scriptures. Or so they have their respects and all that. But it's all within, they've already are on the human platform of life. But a Chinta Beta Beta Tattva, you see, is you're dealing with people that are below that. It can have the widest range. Not that the others can't, but you see very quickly they come up to that platform. But we're still able to function even when we're not at that platform. You know, so it's just so much more developed. So therefore, it can accommodate the greatest. But that doesn't mean that, you know, number 44 is that's perfection. No, that's where we're at today. Because if tomorrow we have, a little by devotional service, a little bit more knowledge and more detachment, we don't move to 43, then that is material. Why are we staying at 44 when we could be at 43? Mm-hmm. So that will come naturally. Everybody will move according to their different point. So therefore, then we have to understand is that no one's saying you're not engaging the senses. In fact, that's the definition of devotional service, is engaging the senses for Krishna. What we're saying is engaging your senses for not for Krishna. That's the problem. Therefore, you have to remember Krishna. Therefore, jigyasa. Right? You have to inquire. You have to want to know. Then you want to know, then it works nice. Don't want to know, doesn't work so nice. Does that make sense? So you have those, oh, we don't get into all that philosophy, that's all jnana. Oh, we don't get into all those rituals, that's all karma. Where does this come from? There may be someone in their attitude or application, yes, has made the mistake and not understood that. We appreciate that. But to just say that because, you know, these are the activities given or this is the knowledge given, because it's more than what you want to do, therefore you say, oh, that's all karma. Right? In other words, I'm at 44 and 43 up, that's all karma and jnana. Right? And definitely anything below is just karma, no jnana. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So anybody above, they're fanatic. Anybody below, they're just gross, attached materialists. 44 is perfect. You understand? This is a problem. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, okay?
Okay.
Yes.
There are examples of devotees who without jibhyasa can also continue in the devotional service to the end of their lives. So, how is that possible?
They, without jibhyasa.
Yeah. They continue with the services very nicely. They chant that they don't know.
But they don't read or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just means that they've had that natural piety.
They hear the classes.
Sorry?
They hear the classes.
They hear, so then there must be something going on. At least if two synapses, you know, interact, then something's happening. You know what I'm saying? That they're absorbed in karma yoga, that's all. So they just didn't get to the platform of Jnana Yoga. So it's not a problem. So if they're always absorbed and they're steadying it, always then absorbed in their service to Krishna, then fine, they'll go back to Godhead. These processes are given so you can move through. You know what I'm saying? So, but whatever stage you're at, if at the time one leaves the body, one remembers Krishna, one goes back to Godhead. Right? Material is, unless you get through the whole thing, then you didn't get anywhere. Does that make sense? So, in other words, you went for the race, you know, Tour de France or something like that, you only got 2/3 of the way through, then that's it, finished, you get nothing. But on the spiritual principle, next year when they have the race, you can start at 2/3. You know, so you're going to get through, right? The other guys may or may not get through. So a slightly different program, right? More inspired. Right? Yes?
But the Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used a very similar analogy to this. Mm. There was some conflict between the disciples and some of the senior men. They had some difficulties and they were criticizing. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, they are like an express train. Express train stops at the station and all the ferry trains go by and say, oh look, it's so slow. But then once the express train takes off, and all the future trains stay behind.
Yeah.
Begin where you stop.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very good. Okay. Shamshaya. Okay, so we've explained this. Therefore, after this, one should inquire about Brahman, right? So, ata sequence, ataha cause, right? So I've studied the sequence of things and all that, and I've caught the cause of everything, right? The cause of everything coming from the Supreme, and I've done the sequence, I've learned all the rituals, because the rituals are all learned in sequence, performed in sequence, right? You go through everything in sequence, right? Does that make sense? So I've done that. Now, having done that, I should inquire about Brahman. So I shouldn't just be looking at things on a physical or metaphysical platform. I should take it through to the transcendental platform. Right? And in doing that, naturally then I'll understand my position, so I will give up being absorbed in sense gratification and desire for liberation. So then the doubt comes up. By study of the Vedas, one can understand all about Brahman, since by studying one will understand the meaning. From that, the mind will then reject karma and worship Brahman. What is the necessity of studying the Brahma Sutras? Right. So, again, is that, you know, it's staying here, is that within the Veda itself. Because, okay, we've studied the Veda, like that, and that all these meanings all coming from Brahman and all that, so since we can get that study from the Veda itself, why should we study Brahma Sutras? Right? Because Brahma Sutras are just commenting on the, these are bringing out the meaning in the Upanishads, so I can study Upanishads and know everything anyway, so why do I need the Vedanta Sutra? Right? Due to understanding the meaning of the Vedas superficially, one's intelligence can be destroyed by doubt, and can take the opposite meaning of its statements. By studying the sutras, one can understand the conclusion of the Vedas and then can overcome doubt and mistaken meanings. One can thus become fixed in the highest truth. This will certainly happen by studying these sutras. Right? So due to doubt, one can lose the intelligence. Because you see, sometimes when someone has a doubt and it's too strong, they don't have the intelligence. The doubt is there, it'll be lighter, then you explain it, it makes sense, they do. But if the doubt's gone deeper, they've lost the intelligence. So even you explain it nicely, they can't accept it. So, you know, the term used then is misgiving. So misgiving is just a deeper doubt where the intelligence has been lost. Because some with the misgiving, you can explain intellectually or logically why it should be done and why something else should not be done. But they can't accept it. Why? Because the intelligence is not working. Right? But because of the modern thing, it's about yourself and it's about winning. It's not about logic.
Therefore, when it's how you say, favorable, you use the intellectual approach. And when that isn't favorable anymore, you go back to the emotional. And when that's not, you use this. So you use any which one of these ones works. There's no consistency. It's not a matter of, okay, this is it, and then you accept the responsibility of that. You just switch to... Does this make some sense?
So you cannot do it, like when you talk about Panchanganyaya, if you get stuck on a doubt, then how can you ever reach the conclusion, in other words?
Yes. Because you have to be able to go through it, and then the doubt is there, there's an answer to that, and then there's a synthesis of that, so that therefore you can deal, then you can understand the point. So that's what they're trying to get to, is that, yes, you can study the Upanishads, but because of studying the Upanishad, then if a doubt arises, how are you going to answer it? So then, being unable to answer it, the intelligence will be misapplied, you know, in the need to apply it, because the soul, being chit, has to know. So therefore, we will use the intelligence to find an answer that makes sense to us, even though it's not actually logical. Therefore, then we will be deviated from the actual truth. So Vedanta Sutra, that will then establish what is the actual truth.
Okay. The Asuras, they practiced Asuravarnashram, but they didn't propagate. And Upanishad said that if you're propagating something that's improper, you're going to help, like, worse than you're just
right.
Practicing it yourself. So which category would we put them into?
Which? This into?
Those are propagating the...
No, but how, I'm just saying, how is this connecting here? Yes, but I was talking about the individual. When you study it, you'll come up, and according to your definition of words or meanings, you may have a doubt. That doubt, therefore, you will, you know, if you're not careful about it, it's not clear, it'll turn into misgiving. Mm-hmm. Having come into a misgiving, you've lost your intelligence. Right?
Yes.
So, then the point is the Vedanta will remove that. You understand? That's the discussion. Now, if you take it that doubt, you become fixed in that, and due to the pride in that, you try to establish it as a philosophy. Because you're doing it, you don't want to be the only one doing it, you want everybody to do it.
Mm.
And so then, because if everybody does it, then you'll feel okay. You know, it's just like, yeah, somebody walks into the assembly, everybody's wearing a dhoti, they're not, they feel uncomfortable.
Mm.
Right? Why would they feel uncomfortable? Right? You wouldn't feel uncomfortable if that's what you need to use to do your service. They're wearing the dhotis for your service, you're wearing non-devotional clothes for your service. What's the problem? You have no problem at all. But if you walk in, you're uncomfortable, then there's something wrong here. Either you didn't understand the occasion, so then you did like this, and so then you'd ask, oh, sorry, I didn't realize it was this. Or it's because you'd rather wear the karmic clothes, but because they're wearing the devotional, because you know that's more recommended, but you don't agree with that and you feel uncomfortable. So therefore, you will then strive to get everybody to wear karmic clothes. So when you walk into the group, then everybody's wearing karmic clothes, you're wearing karmic clothes, hey, everybody's cool. That's a problem. Yes, but that's not the point of the discussion. You understand? That is a discussion. It's but I'm saying is, in other words, the point being made is what the conversation should go around. These other points come up in application, but they'll be dealt with in another point.
My point is that the Upanishads address such people, but I just wanted to categorize them in my own head. Upanishads, they address those people who are propagating, and they're...
No, but what does that have to do with what we're talking about now, if you're going to take it that far? In this sense, we're not talking about who is such a person, and whether it makes a difference, whether it's a doubt that the intelligence hasn't been disturbed, or I mean, it means it hasn't come to the point where it's you can't deal with it. In other words, a doubt that the intelligence is disturbed, it's a misgiving, then actually, even if you use intellectual presentations, logical, they can't understand it. So the point is what they're saying, to avoid that, because the question is why do we have to study Vedanta? Why can't we just study Upanishads? So the answer is given, by just studying Upanishads, you may miss the point.
Yeah.
So therefore, if you study Vedanta Sutra, it gives the logical explanation on what is the conclusion of the Upanishads.
Mm-hmm.
Understand? So when we're dealing in Adhikarana, then we have to keep the discussion within that. See, when we in Bhagavatam, it gets into some social aspect, then that social aspect is very broad. So then we can take it down so many roads and so many avenues to go. But here, it's just a point of intelligence, of logic, that it's just going through these stages. So we should stay within that. Otherwise, then the discussion won't maintain that clear logical progression, and will miss the progression as it goes. Right? Bhagavatam can handle going into the digressions because it's written in that way. Right? You have a story going, and then there's some doubts about that story. It goes off in a different direction, then it comes back. Because he's asked a question. He's answering that question. Giving the example, it brings up other questions. He answers those other questions, then goes back to the original question. You understand? That's the advantage of the Purana. This is Nyaya. So it's just the logic. It's going through one adhikarna connects to the next. Then you see that there's a satisfaction in here. It's a different taste. It's just that cleanness of just nice, intelligent, and logical. You understand? Yes. So that taste, appreciate now. The other one gets into all the emotional kind of things and this and that. Bhagavatam accommodates that. This is just this is Nyaya Prasthana. It's just the logical presentation. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Govardhana. Jai.